don't get it. We should have seen a game like the one Aditi was in Baltimore for, where the Ravens just put it on the Chargers. I thought Ray Fittipaldo hit the nail on the head. Two straight weeks, the defense, they let Teddy Bridgewater come within a whisker of tying the game last week, and then they let Geno Smith and a bunch of backups and a ragtag team get the game to overtime last night.
I tweeted out, left too much time on the clock for Geno Smith when the Steelers went ahead 20-17.
And you thought it was a ha-ha funny
tweet. Yeah, you send that one out
as a sarcastic Mueller.
You send that one out as a sarcastic joke, but after what you've just watched for about 28 minutes of that half, you go, ah, there's also a chance it might be true. And sure enough, it proved to be true.
Aditi's with us.
This is what my problem with all of this is.
They're pros. They get paid too.
No, the game that I was at yesterday exemplifies it as well. I think that you are putting way too much on the Steelers' defense. The whole object of playing good football is playing complementary football. Your defense needs help from your offense. Yesterday, the Ravens played outstanding defense. Defensive coordinator Wink Martindale had a tremendous plan, and they executed well, and I can get into more detail what was so impressive.
Strawberries,
really,
battleships, etc.
Yep. No, even more than that. But what was even more impressive, guys, is that the way the Ravens' offense bled the clock. Look at the time of possession. They ran the ball. They ran the ball in dominating fashion. They kept the ball out of Justin Herbert's hands. They built a lead, which enabled the defense to do more. When was the last time the Steelers' offense did that? Tennessee last year?
But the defense had 12 minutes and a Bill Cowher, Troy Polamalu speech to rest and pick up on where they left off in the first half, and they let Seattle, with Alex Collins and Travis Homer, go 75 yards on 9 runs for a tutter.
Let me tell you something. I hate to break it to you, but an offense that bleeds the clock and lets you run and lets you rest and gives you a lead is way more valuable than any speech and any words anywhere. I mean, you're expecting so much of the Steelers defense, which, yes.
Well, we should. They're mostly first-round picks, Aditi.
Fine, but you need a little help from that offense. You need help from the offense. You need an offense that bleeds the clock. You need an offense that can stay on the field for a little bit of time. You need an offense that can build a lead.
Well, they did. They were up 2 touchdowns.
I'm not, and again, like, as I sit here and I say this, full disclosure, I obviously missed big parts of the game. I watched part of it at the Baltimore airport. Of course, it took me forever to get this Baltimore server to actually put the game on, which I thought was a little ludicrous. But I watched part of it in Baltimore. Then I'm in the air. Then I'm listening to some of it on the radio on the way home. And it was very, how do I say this in the most diplomatic way? I don't feel that I got every single detail in the part that I was listening to on the radio. And then by the time I got home, it was ready for overtime, basically. And so that's the part that I saw.
Aditi, I would
haven't been up for a long time.
What you said there that resonates with me about the Steelers offense is this: like, we are expecting a lot of the defense. There are a lot of first round picks, but I guess one of my overall major takeaways from that game is they clearly had taken a step forward against a pretty good defense in Denver, the way they were able to move the ball on them. This game collectively felt like a step back, obviously. An obvious one for the offensive line and for the quarterback against a very bad defense. That did stand out to me, that they just could not put long stretches of coherent play on that side of the ball together.
And it felt as if, at least from what I heard, it felt as if the run game disappeared for a while. And
it did.
It did come back later, but yeah.
Well, for one drive, for the one that they kicked a field goal that put them up 3 right before Seattle tied it. Najee was great, but he averaged 3.4 yards a carry again, Aditi.
Yeah, so you do want to see them being able to build off of that. I mean, but look, at the end of the day, the game is changing, and you're hearing Mike Tomlin say this. I mean, he talked about it a week ago when he was asked about fourth downs globally, and he said, look, the reason that we're seeing more teams go for it on fourth down is because more and more quarterbacks are mobile, and then he said that's not a part of our game. And so yesterday, I'm at this game, and it's amazing. I texted Brooke Pryor this at one point yesterday. It's amazing to watch two quarterbacks move. And I don't even mean it like, oh, there's Lamar Jackson scrambling for 20 yards. I'm just talking about moving a little.
Yeah.
Aditi, we took calls today, and they were all excellent, actually. Our callers brought the goods. We were trying to get a sense. Did you come out of that game feeling better or worse about the Steelers? Give us your mood. I'm not kidding you. Like, the second call goes, guys, I'm just worried about Ben's arthritis acting up.
Yes.
That was, but like, you laugh because that's something that you would be saying about your grandma or grandpa or something like that. But mm-hmm. at the same time, it is a legitimately relevant point when it comes to evaluating him and evaluating them on that side of the ball.
I mean, I think the bye comes at a really good time. But also, once again, there was something my husband sent me, a graphic. I saw it when I landed. He had sent me, he had taken a photo of the television and he said, look at this graphic. And it was the Steelers ranking last in play action basically every year yep. for the last 6 years. And it's jarring.
I know. you know what? I actually thought Ben overall played by the new standards now for Ben at 39. I thought Ben was decent yesterday. I did not think the game was really a referendum on how poor he's playing and how awful he is. I do, though, come out of the game wondering more and more about the opinions that are out there on the receivers. Claypool can't catch 50-50 balls. He's shoving a guy and taking a horrible offensive pass interference penalty when they're driving to win the game. James Washington plays 8 snaps. I mean, you gushed about Washington last week, Aditi.
Yeah.
8 snaps. Come on. You've got a gadget guy, Ray McLeod, getting, you know, triple the snaps as Washington. I don't get it.
I don't. And again, I wasn't there. I don't know if, and I haven't made a phone call to see if that's injury related in any way or being extra prudent or if something was aggravated or, you know, I keep coming back to the same exact thing. You recognize that you have a 39-year-old quarterback who cannot play the game in the same way that he played the game 10 years ago. So it is incumbent upon you to create an offense that plays to whatever strengths there are. And I just don't feel like that's what's being done right now. And I think that I'll give you something else. So last week I talked to Keenan Allen, you know, who's a veteran and with the Chargers, very, very honestly, has spent all these years with Philip Rivers. And he's telling me that a year ago, he couldn't even talk to Justin Herbert at the line of scrimmage, that the kid was so young and green that he basically had to get the play call in and get it out. And that was it. Don't confuse him. Don't talk to him. Now come forward 1 year, he's more comfortable, this and that. Allen joked, I can actually talk to him. But he said, you know, I just wish that he knew how to get out of a bad call. Like sometimes we just have a bad play. And where Philip Rivers could sit and diagnose and say, this isn't going to work, this kid is young enough, he can't do that. But here's the flip side to that. The Chargers recognize what they have in him. They know that he can't do everything that Philip Rivers did. And so they play to the strength that he does have. To that end, right now, Ben Roethlisberger can't do everything that he used to do. So play to what will help him more. And this, again, comes back to, I don't understand why there wasn't a greater investment in the offensive line in bodies and then in development in the preseason, such that it's not taking 5, 6, 7 games to get that physicality and that run game going.
Other than that,
games into the season, why is the run game still a question?
Because you said investment. I think that's part of it. The players right now, the ceiling for performance isn't high enough, and it might not get high enough. What is an offense that can? Because you talk about the Herbert example, and I find it interesting because Philip Rivers famously immobile himself pretty much for his entire career, but especially at the end. I mean, it was like watching, you know, Forrest Gump with the knee brace, you know, the metal flying off of him when he tries to scramble.
Yeah, but they still did things a year ago.
So that gets to my point or my question here, Aditi. Like, what would an offense with a completely immobile quarterback, even Mike Tomlin's admitted this jokingly about Ben, but not really, what is that offense that takes advantage of what he does do well look like at this juncture? Like, how do you set one up? Because I'll take Justin Herbert being green still, but being able to move and having gobs of natural ability over trying to sort of Rube Goldberg something together that works for Ben.
Well, and obviously, and that speaks to the future as well and
right.
your growth and your development and your longevity of your franchise, which is another conversation we should have. I don't mean the longevity of your franchise because obviously the Steelers are not going anywhere. Please.
Well,
this current form of them, though, I think
if you're talking about this era, that's absolutely relevant. Yes.
Well, that's what we're talking about is this era. As you look at Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson and the talent in Cleveland, we'll come back to that. The thing that the Colts could do was run, 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 and that was a good line. And the Steelers said they wanted to do that. I mean, they've said it from the minute last season ended. But again, come back to that. Beyond spending your first-round pick on a tremendous young running back, and he deserves that that title because that is what he is, what else did you do? What else have you done? Everything has to start with an absolutely dominant run game. You don't have an, oh my God, the Ravens yesterday, did you see the three guys that scored touchdowns? A combined 89 years. They're three has-beens, Latavius Murray, Devontae Freeman, and our old friend Le'Veon Bell. I mean, these guys are all 30, 29 years old, and all three of them scored. And the Ravens' line is not – I mean, they lost a guy for a little while. They lost Brad Bozeman. Al Villanueva is playing left tackle because Ronnie Stanley –
Well, isn't there a guy that wears the number 8 jersey that's like – that makes it all – everything you're describing there that's like spare parts work?
Makes
I mean, I won't say
better.
That around – Craig is getting super mad that I just said that because he just doesn't like to acknowledge Jackson's greatness, but – I mean, that is a big part here.
Point. Why is Craig so stubborn about this?
He digs his heels. Listen, Aditi, he digs his heels in on things. He had the entire city of Baltimore on Twitter ready to absolutely light him up yesterday because he was trolling them after one of the most impressive wins a team has had in the NFL all year.
You know, Craig, you and Matt should really hang out because Matt tried to do the same thing to me yesterday, too. Like, we were texting about, I was telling him what I think of Burrow and Jackson and Baker and this and that. And he's ripping Jackson. He's just like, he still thinks the guy's a one-trick pony.
Craig, what did you say to me?
Do you watch?
Craig, what did you say to me this morning? We had our little casual phone call before we both got into the station. And I brought up that game. What did you say about Jackson's performance?
The tweet that I sent you?
Yeah.
They mostly overcame his inability to pass.
This is what I'm dealing with in here, Aditi. It's him on one side and Pony on the other. This is what I deal with. They overcame Lamar Jackson's inability to throw the football to win that game.
You know what? There are just some people that reason and logic don't work with.
Facts or evidence. You have just described Craig so well. He's in there laughing. He knows he's been caught red-handed.
I think I've heard that exact same line from my own wife.
I was going to say, I think you have really, you've gleaned some great insight into the Riley marriage here, Aditi. No, but to go back to this, I don't want to lose track too much here. How do you, you want to run the ball to just, you know, to make an offense that works for an aging quarterback, but absent the consistent ability to do that, and you've already laid out the reasons why the Steelers don't possess it, what else is an option on the menu? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the point. I don't think that there is other than that. When your quarterback cannot move, when he cannot move at all, then you have to play not new football where you spread everybody wide and your quarterback's got all this time to do whatever. You've got to play old football. You have to run the ball. You have to be dominant. You have to out-physical everybody. So the Steelers said they wanted to do that, but saying it and then taking the steps to actually make it happen are two different things.
So does that mean Banner should go in? I mean, I thought it was so weird that, yeah, they had to activate him off the injured reserve, but okay, so he's healthy enough to do that, but you don't even give him a helmet and a uniform last night, and then your left tackle gets hurt.
Right. You know, I did think that that was very odd and very unusual. You guys know that last week I did try to get Mike Tomlin to answer that. You know, how do you – because the thing with the offensive line is there's no unit that works in concert as much as the line does. Mm-hmm. So – they are the sum of their parts more than they are their individual parts. And you might have a group of five that's not necessarily the five best, but that five comes together as the best unit. So here was this unit that finally played 100% of the snaps together that actually looked like they'd taken a big step. What do you do? If Banner's actually one of the better guys, is your most physical guy, and he should be in that group, how do you weigh messing with that chemistry versus inserting a guy that obviously is one of your top five? And Tomlin just wouldn't answer it. He just kept saying, well, that's a good problem to manage. That's something, the fact that they didn't play him, I don't know if they were just trying to give him two extra weeks, you know, give him last week and then give him the bye week and then just do that. I don't know if they just didn't have a good answer on who to take out or not, but I don't see what the harm is in dressing him. in a heaven forbid situation, which, as you said, is exactly where they were yesterday.
Text us on the Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line. Edgar reminds you to text responsibly. Aditi Kinkabwala with us. She was in Baltimore. I'm sure she's also aware of the fact that the Browns got blown out and Baker Mayfield got hurt and didn't play well. And now they're freaking out and panicking in Cleveland.
Did you see his presser? Do you remember the one everyone laughed at him because he was like, it looked like he was wearing like an old overcoat from like a Home Alone movie?
And he had a weird mustache?
Yeah, this one he's wearing a t-shirt that looks like he dipped it in just pure sweat beforehand. And then he's wearing like a blazer that I would wear on TV.
Mm.
But it's draped over him because I guess he's got a sling on his arm. Everything's going well up there for them.
I punch every week. If you watch the film, and I know they do, it's nothing malicious. I don't intend to punch him in the face or in the arm at all. I'm striking at the football, and I just told him it's something that I do on a regular basis. It's not something that I'm trying to affect the player in any way. I'm just simply trying to get the football out.
4:31, time brought to you by WeatherSeal. Get a brand new WeatherSeal roofing system versus a dollar down with WeatherSeal. Aditi with us from NFL Network. Craig Riley producing, and that was the T.J. Watt situation last night. Punching at Alex Collins to get the ball out, was flagged for it because it was after the whistle, I guess, and then explaining it afterwards. It is wild to me, regardless of intent, that the NFL has legislated trash talk out of the game. But if you want to punch somebody to get the ball out, go right ahead, as long as it's within the whistles. Does that make any sense to anyone?
He was throwing big old soup bone right hands. It was unbelievable.
I mean,
it was surreal.
To me, a punch is a punch. It doesn't hurt any less if it's on purpose or not. Kadarius Toney winds up and punches a guy and gets thrown out of a game, but because I guess he meant to do it.
I've never seen a player. I've seen like Peanut Tillman basically made a career out of punching the ball out from people. I've never seen somebody wind up like they were making, like they were somebody who was going to punch you and take like a big swing.
It was like
at
Nolan
it.
Ryan on Robin yes! Ventura from there, back in
that
the
was
day,
the
Aditi.
Least, that was the least football punch I've ever seen, Aditi.
And there were a bunch of them.
Well, I mean, I am employed by the National Football League, and therefore it is advised that I not discuss officiating. And while Mike Tomlin may be able to afford fines, I cannot.
So you think Tomlin's going to face a big six-figure fine from the NFL for what he said after the game, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if he really will, actually. I mean, he is a member of the competition committee.
I mean, he called it an embarrassment.
He did, but I also think that he's got a certain level of stature to be able to speak. I don't really know. The whole fine system to me is a little bit crazy. Frankly, I'd rather talk about taunting fans. What did you think of Aaron Rodgers?
My wife loved it. She watched it live, and she looked over at me with the most loving eyes I've ever seen, and she said, "Honey, I can't wait till he's our quarterback next year." And I melted. It was the most romantic thing that's happened in our lives in probably a few months.
Yeah, the most romantic thing since they said I do.
I can't wait for Rodgers to come here. I watch the Steelers and
so done that it's definitely happening.
Well, like Tomlin and Rodgers, we'll see it again tomorrow. Rodgers will go on McAfee's show and he'll talk about Pittsburgh, and Tomlin will try to sneak in some reference to Aaron Rodgers at his press
Rodgers
conference.
Will say something like, "Can you believe how the referees were jerking around the Steelers at the end of that game?"
Yeah.
And then Tomlin is going to say, "You know, even my friend Aaron notice
something
Tomlin
that will
was
get
happening.
Asked a question about taunting because he's on the competition committee, and he'll say, "You know, apparently it's okay when you do it to fans, like that quarterback up in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers," and it'll go on.
And he said he owns them, and he does have a point, Aditi. You know, he does have a point because his career record against those guys is.
Aditi, I know you didn't want to talk about.
It's so funny because I was talking to one of my favorite producers, Bobby V, who lives in Chicago, and he had just listened to morning radio there, and apparently the mayor of Chicago was on. And there's all this discussion about the stadium and everything. And so she was asked very straight, according to my producer. So as you deal with the new stadium issues, are you going to be negotiating with the Bears' new owner, Aaron Rodgers? And even she had to laugh at that.
Aditi, I know you didn't want to talk about the defense in the first segment, but I do think right now, and this is part of why at 3-3, I'm not like getting warm and fuzzy feelings and thinking that the Steelers are back in it. I'm just
because
like,
they're not.
Well, I'm stunned by how little Minka Fitzpatrick is doing. And I don't expect him to pick off two passes every game. But when your defensive coordinator who's been around football for about 80 years compares you to Troy Polamalu And then through six games, you miss routine tackles. Like, even make, what's Tomlin always say? Make the routine plays routine. He's not even doing that. And he wants big money. He wants the TJ Watt money.
You know what's so interesting to me is when you are in a contract year, are you a Bud Dupree and you just play up because you know this is your moment to earn your money? Or do you try to do too much? Does it paralyze you a little too much? How does being in that position affect you? And, you know, I don't think that anybody can really answer that until they're in that position and they're in that moment.
It's
hard. I think there's a huge spotlight on him and everybody expects him to be this massive game breaker. And again, it's one of those things that, you know, unfortunately, this could be the one major big contract. You know, an NFL player doesn't have an indefinite lifespan in this role, in this profession. And so that's a lot of pressure on a player. And I'm sure that he's a guy who puts a lot of pressure on himself. And I think that this is a defense that feels a lot of pressure because, again, going back to this, there's not a lot of complimentary football being played. There's a lot of pressure being put on this one unit to kind of carry this whole team.
Yeah, but Minka's supposed to be above that. He's got the Saban seal of approval.
I take the same approach to him as I take to TJ Watt, that if you're, in Watt's case, he got the money, but if you're going to be paid attention to on every play, if you're the best of the best or among them at your position, you got to persevere despite that, is I guess what I would say.
I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with you at all. I'm just saying that not everybody can always do what they're supposed to do. Craig knows that he's supposed to give respect to Lamar Jackson. His rational part of his mind tells him.
That is a remarkably small part of his mind.
The numbers.
That is.
And yet he is still.
The rational part of Craig's brain is like when they do the whole, like, this is how large a crocodile's brain is. That's the rational part of Craig's brain.
I'd just like to point out Ben Roethlisberger had a better passer rating yesterday than Lamar Jackson.
Well, Craig, give Aditi the other brainiac take about what you want them to do at linebacker for the next game against the Browns.
Oh, no.
I want the guy who's willing to put in the effort and make the plays that are in front of him. Give me Robert Spillane over Devin Bush.
Oh, my God. Craig, I appreciate where your heart is. I appreciate that you think that that's what is going to make a difference, but that is not happening.
But I don't disagree with him that much on that one. Because if the Browns' game plan is really to run if Nick Chubb's healthy and to go to that ground game, and if you don't really think the quarterback for the Browns is a legitimate threat, why wouldn't you want the better downhill linebacker and better tackler in for the majority of the snaps against them?
And is that what you think that Mike Tomlin believes?
No,
that
but
that
I'm saying
the better downhill tackler and the better linebacker on the field.
Well, the film doesn't lie about the tackling part.
You know, but sometimes it doesn't even matter what the film shows. And I'm reminded of that because I'll go back to something else. A few years ago, L.J. Fort, the Steelers had to make a choice between L.J. Fort and Tyler Matakevich. And there was definitely people in the building that thought L.J. Fort was the better player. But Mike Tomlin liked Tyler Matakevich, and so did Danny Smith. He did do a little bit more on special teams as well, mm-hmm. and Tyler stayed.
But they're already taking things away from Bush. He's not the play caller anymore. That's on Schobert's plate. The third down at the end of the game, before Seattle kicks the field goal, the play where Tomlin's going to get fined, the game's on the line, and Bush isn't in. It's Schobert and Spillane. So they're already doing things that at least hint at the idea that they're not completely pleased or happy with the way he's playing. So, you know, each game is different. If the matchup says Cleveland's best at running the ball, wouldn't you want your better run-stopping linebackers in the game? I mean,
play action is a thing, though, would be the devil's advocate argument there. And Spillane
But what are you more afraid of, Baker Mayfield off play action or Nick Chubb going for 7.7 yards per carry like he did 2 weeks ago against the Chargers?
Let's see how healthy Nick Chubb is. Kareem Hunt is out for a few weeks. You probably won't see him. I think that Baker Mayfield is really hurt.
Why don't they play Keenum up there? I think if they were to play Case Keenum, this week and against the Steelers, I would feel like the Cleveland Browns are going to go 2-0.
Chris, if Aditi's saying the Steelers don't have the balls to bench Devin Bush for Spillane, you understand. Think Stefanski's going to bench they Baker ex- Mayfield
he has
for
a torn
Keenan?
Free.
Totally different people. Totally different.
He has a
people,
torn labrum,
it
too.
Depends on how. Yeah, I think it really depends on how badly Baker is hurt. And I think Kevin Stefanski has a lot of trust in Case Keenum. Remember, Kevin Stefanski was in Minnesota
True.
When Case Keenum was in Minnesota, and Case Keenum was executing Kevin Stefanski's offense and winning a lot of games. So I don't think this is about a lack of trust in Keenum by any means. I think Baker is that guy that, you know, he's got one leg hanging off and no one arm and, you know, can barely breathe and is still wanting to be in there. And he's your leader. He's your guy. And
well, he can't play with Odell
leader,
Beckham
he's
Jr.
He's not your appointed.
I mean, let's just call it like it is. When Odell's in there, he gets concerned. He's got to feed Odell. And then Odell, you know, we know that he needs to be kept happy because of his Giants history. It is a very awkward dynamic for Baker Mayfield when OBJ is there. Let's just call it what it is.
It's got Ken Carmen torn apart at the seams, Aditi. That's what's really happening
here.
And
those seams were already stressed.
Come on.
But he, you know, we do talk about it weekly, this Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield thing. And I keep trying to say that it is not actually really truly a chemistry thing, that it's a time thing, that Baker got much better at the offense last year when Odell was hurt.
Exactly.
I mean, that was natural progression. Okay, no, you know, like, it's not always cause and effect the way that you see it. Baker was in a brand new offense with brand new coaches and a brand new play caller, and they had no time together in an off season. So just like the Steelers line, the Steelers using the season to make their line gel, the Browns had no other option but to use the season to get their offense going. And just as everybody was becoming comfortable and the coaches were learning what worked with Baker and Baker was learning what the coaches wanted, Odell got hurt. It wasn't really a surprise that the offense got better. That's what you would expect. Week after week after week, you should get better. The problem with that is that I expected that at some point this year, you would see Odell and Baker clicking. And there have been a couple too many instances where Odell's wide open and Baker doesn't necessarily.
And when it's fourth down, don't drop the ball, Odell, like he did yesterday in the red zone.
Well, but that's a whole other thing, too. I mean, I've seen Odell make 5 million amazing trick one-handed catches, and I have not seen him make 5 million tough catches. To quote Mike Tomlin, make the routine plays routinely.
Are they going to start Keenum in one of these next two games? Do you think it actually happens?
I'm waiting to find out how badly Baker really is hurt and if they can sort of, if they do need to actually sit him. I've said that. I said this on Ken Carmen's show last week. I wouldn't be surprised. I might have said it to you guys. I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of the year we find out the young man has a broken collarbone or something. I mean, I just think Baker is a guy that plays through everything. He was asked yesterday, how do you feel?
Well, so does Big Ben. He's got more injuries than anybody in football, according to the injury report. Peck,
according
hip,
to Ben.
Arthritis in his knee. Go on and on.
If Cowher, you
injured
know what,
finger.
Craig, do we still have it? Cowher was in the building last night. That would be a perfect time to break the glass on one of our all-time favorite quotes about Ben.
Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, driven by Jim Shorkey, Kia, Wexford, North Huntington, Uniontown. Did you guys see this trade rumor
out there? Wait, what's the code?
Oh, it's the old Bill. This one died in our 93.7 The Fan house fire for all of our audio, but it's Bill Cowher infamously saying after a game, Ben does not have broken toes. When Roethlisberger, I think, said all 10 of his toes were broken
and
in
ben
a game.
Ben does not have broken toes.
Oh!
Thank you, Bill.
There it is!
Have you guys seen the trade rumor out there with the Steelers today?
No.
It's a good one.
No.
It's a juicy, juicy one, and we have the best insider to talk about it next. With the Aditi Kinkabwala, NFL Network gets the best access. She was in Baltimore to watch the Ravens blow out the upstart Chargers yesterday. Steelers even their record at 3-3, and yet there is a story from Pro Football Focus. Joe Hayden, trade block. Joe Hayden doesn't have a deal beyond this year. Wanted one. Rosenhaus went for it with the Steelers. Couldn't get it. Probably won't be back. The way the comp thing works, if he signs with somebody in the offseason, Steelers will probably get a third or fourth round pick back for him. But if the Steelers get beat by the Browns and they're 3-4, I mean, wouldn't you at least listen, Chris? I mean, he's a guy that corners have, I think, value. Corners, look at Richard Sherman. He was signed on like a Wednesday and he started for the Bucs on a Sunday.
Joe Hayden's a dude that would look considerably better, I think, as a role player defensive
back. I think a team like Tampa probably would trade a second round pick for him. Well, they're going for a Super Bowl.
Yeah, they're all in now.
But the Steelers don't do stuff like that, will be what Aditi probably tells us.
No, I don't see it happening. It's not that the Steelers don't do stuff like that, but I don't see it happening. And I also don't see the Steelers, you know, giving up on the season. And
would that be giving up?
I mean, he's a key part of that defense. He is one of the veteran. I mean, he's certainly the veteran leader of the back end of the defense. I've not heard that from anyone that I have spoken to at all. When you talk about due diligence, I think it's the same way that Pete Carroll answered a question about Cam Newton today, that of course you're going to do your due diligence into anybody, anytime, anywhere. You take a phone call. That doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to act on it. I'm reminded simply because I was in Baltimore yesterday.
Yeah.
And I don't know if everybody.
Well, they traded for Marcus Peters. That changed their season around a couple of years ago. There you go. Okay. Corners can make a big difference.
They're very, very different organizations. And I had this conversation with Al Villanueva earlier this year, that they can be two great organizations that are very loyal, that, you know, really embody the idea of team and still have two different ways to skin a cat. So just because the Ravens do something doesn't mean the Steelers do. But I'm going back to this. The last time that Lamar Jackson played the Chargers was January of 2019. I'm at that game. This was Lamar Jackson's rookie year. So 2018, the Ravens were 4-6, and they were ready to run John Harbaugh out of town. Mm-hmm. Okay, he kind of had been put on notice by Steve Bisciotti the previous offseason. Things weren't going well. Joe Flacco's back was a mess. He was a mess. And Harbaugh makes a decision to put Lamar Jackson in. Mm-hmm. The Ravens rattle off. Whatever, 6 straight wins. They go to the playoffs, they have the Chargers, and in the first half, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense looks horrific.
Yep.
Jackson completes 2 passes.
Yep.
So it's halftime, and the Ravens are legitimately having a conversation, should they put Joe Flacco in? Mm-hmm. The players come out on the field, and Joe Flacco starts throwing. And we don't know, is Joe Flacco going in this game in the second half, and is Lamar Jackson sitting? Ultimately, Flacco doesn't. The Ravens stick with Jackson. Prevent defense late in the fourth quarter. Jackson throws 2 touchdown passes to Michael Crabtree. It's a much closer game. Jackson just this weekend said to me, we ran out of time, whatever. After that game, I'm in the locker room and I'm having a private conversation with John Harbaugh. We're talking about, you know, what other jobs are out there? Is he actually ever really going to go anywhere? And we talk about this decision. And he says to me, ultimately, he said they absolutely did talk about it. Ultimately, he decided Lamar Jackson is our future. I need Lamar Jackson to know that we have faith in him. We believe in him. And look at where they are now. Lamar Jackson's won an MVP. He's developed as a passer every year. He's as good of a leader, and he is the most well-liked person in that locker room. My point in telling this story is that Ravens fans booed that player. Booed him. They booed when the Ravens threw him back on the field. Jimmy Smith, the veteran corner, had to yell at fans. We're talking about Aaron Rodgers yelling at fans. Jimmy Smith yelled at his own fans and said, who do you think brought us here? Why do you think we're here? It was that vicious, the booing of Lamar Jackson. Now look at where Ravens fans are sitting and what they think of their quarterback. I just think that you have to recognize that sometimes there is development. Sometimes there is injury. Sometimes there is something else going on in a player's mind. These people are human beings. And obviously, they're expected to be professionals. But to sit here and write off Devin Bush, to write off Minkah Fitzpatrick, to write off guys right away, patience is not always the worst thing. Really, truly, I don't think it's always the worst thing here. I know I'm coming down like on the side of the defense today and that I'm sitting here and being very frustrated by the offensive line. But I just think that, you know, the blame is not equal to go around. Mm. And now I feel like all three of you just tuned me out.
No, I didn't tune you out. I was deciding, do I want to go down this road? I feel like it would be everything that you just said as it may. If I were going to have less patience with a group, it would be with the one that is comprised primarily of first-round picks, which is their defense. Like, I can't be as mad at that offensive line in theory they didn't get draft. You know, it wasn't under their control that they got drafted where they were, and that the Steelers decided to put together a line full of third and fourth rounders. Like, I would argue that the defense
that the
has less
didn't
cause.
Play them together in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, the Steelers have self-sabotage.
Yeah, that
there.
Same patience thing you stress should probably apply to that offensive line more than their guys on defense.
But I also believe in development. Look, the Ravens have done everything they can to develop Lamar Jackson.
No doubt, but here's the thing. These guys don't have lifetime contracts. You're going to have to make a decision. Right now, we're about a third of the way through the season. I would not pick up Devin Bush's fifth-year option, and I would not give Minka Fitzpatrick a long-term deal. And I wish I could say otherwise.
Do you think you have a much higher standard for those guys because the Steelers traded up for Devin Bush and because Minka was a first-round pick? Because
yes, but we should.
In Minka's case, I have a higher
standard
because he
showed
it, though.
They'd have Justin Herbert if they didn't trade for Minka, or they could have.
Yeah, they wouldn't.
You could make that argument.
They
would have been in position to draft him if they wanted to.